and welcome to another TeachNet Learning podcast. I'm Pat Brennan and I'm delighted to be joined today by Sarah Gibbons, Deputy Principal in Old Bawn Community School in Talla in Dublin. Sarah's going to talk to us about the digital learning journey the school is beyond and also becoming a Microsoft Showcase school. Welcome to the TeachNet podcast, Sarah.
Thanks a million, Pat, and thank you very much for having me.
You might just tell us a little bit about yourself, your teaching background and your path to becoming Deputy Principal in Old Bawn.
Absolutely. I started teaching in 2010 and I have been in Old Bawn Community School since I qualified. I am a business studies and economics teacher, but also, like most teachers, ended up teaching a variety of different subjects. And I think that happening to me in my early stages really gave me an appreciation of how important it was to develop my skills within the classroom, classroom management, different creative ways of delivering content, and it's really stood to me. So I did that here in school for 9 years, and then the opportunity arose for a deputy principal. So I said, right, I'll just throw my hat in the ring. And I was appointed deputy principal in May 2019. I'm part of a wonderful team here. We have a principal and I have two other deputies that work alongside me. And we have had loads of different changes of personnel within our senior leadership team. So the only static has been my brilliant principal, Ursula McCabe. But we were really landed in it. She had started as principal at the same time as I started as deputy. And we were just finding our feet when COVID came. And it's funny because we all talk about COVID and trying to find the opportunity that arose because of the challenges. But I do think COVID was one of the best things that happened to our school because we were on our digital journey, and I'm sure you're going to ask a little bit about that, but it absolutely catapulted us. And we have an amazing staff who embraced everything that we were trying to do really, really slowly up onto the point that COVID hit. And then from there and still up to now, our staff are always trying to learn, always trying to upskill. And that has brought us on such an amazing learning journey for staff. And then obviously the payoff comes for our students.
That's, I suppose, what I want to talk to you about here. Your school being on this digital journey. Circa 2017 was when this started. Looking at this, I suppose, standing back from it, what was the primary objective of this embracing of technology? I mean, obviously up to this point, there would have been a lot of technology use in the school. But there seems to have been a change of tack here and very much a focus and a primary objective. You might explain that a wee bit more for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is quite interesting because I can't take any credit for this at all. You mentioned kind of circa 2017. It was actually in 2016 that our then principal, Paul Crone, and his deputies, one being Ursula McCabe, who's now our principal, they made the decision that we kind of needed to potentially start looking at bringing devices in for our students. And along with another AP1, Yvonne Marley, who's now a deputy here in our school, they basically felt that our students were potentially at a disadvantage because they didn't have digital skills as they entered the workforce or as they entered third level education. So we would have a huge variety of families that come to our school. And not every student was coming into our school and then being able to go home and research something on a family computer or a laptop that is belonging to a parent, because some families didn't have a laptop or a computer. More families actually didn't have internet access. And I suppose the visionary that Paul and his team were at the time, they were seeing what was coming down the tracks. We were obviously starting to fully embrace junior cycle. We were looking at CBAs. The school was only equipped with 2 computer rooms. And while I know we were very lucky, a lot of schools weren't equipped with that. We're a school of 1,000 pupils. So as you were looking at the rollout of CBAs and then obviously research projects at senior cycle, they just saw this obvious gap. So there was the equality issue that we were sort of facing. And then it was, how do we actually best meet the needs of our students and our teachers so that they can fully fulfill the requirements within their curriculum? That was the original reasoning and thinking behind the school and bringing in technology. And I just think it was really forward thinking at the time.
It's interesting, I mean, because you mentioned, you know, in the earlier piece about the whole COVID pandemic, and that was hugely significant, particularly you were talking about that digital divide that exists out there, particularly impacted students. I think there are a lot of valuable lessons that were learned from that time. But just the other thing I'd like to just, I suppose, unpick, you were starting on a journey of change. Now, mission critical here was what hardware you're going to go for, what software, and so on. As we know, being a Microsoft Showcase school, it's Windows devices and Microsoft 365. Why go down that route? Just, you might explain the rationale for it.
Absolutely. So prior to our full digital reform, we were using email addresses. And it's kind of funny even speaking like this, because it sounds like quite archaic nearly at this point when you just say just email addresses. But we actually were using Gmail, and that was the school's domain at the time. And Ursula was speaking to some friends or some colleagues who had a daughter who was using Microsoft OneNote as part of her work in college, I think it was at the time. But Ursula had seen somebody using OneNote and thought, wow, isn't that a fantastic way of having all of those folders that we all have in our lockers or as teachers in our classrooms and having it all together and that you can access it no matter where you are. So it was actually Ursula who kind of first of all broached the whole idea of moving to Microsoft in order to use OneNote. And Paul was very trusting and very supportive of this idea. And at the time, they actually met with Ian Cochrane, who was working with Microsoft, and asked him, what do you think? Can you give us the vision for Microsoft in education? And he obviously explained all of the different tools. And that was actually why we moved to Microsoft at the time. So when the one-to-one program was, we were getting ready for it. We spent 2 years prepping our teachers before students were going one-to-one. It was at the beginning of that we made the shift from the email addresses that were Gmail to actually going full on to the Microsoft platform.
That's a key thing. It's not, and I think people listening to this who are maybe, you know, a few stages earlier in development than yourselves, you know, you were planning a major shift. There's a whole lot of logistical issues. There's a whole lot of pedagogical issues involved. First of all, you need buy-in. You need staff on board, but also parents. You're getting their buy-in. You might just, I suppose, initially give you, how did you get that buy-in with parents? And then, I suppose, crucially as well, teachers.
Yeah, and I definitely think that is kind of one of the scariest parts of the journey to begin with. Not necessarily the teachers, because I'm in the lucky position that I've always been in the school. So I know everybody quite well. But the buy-in from the parents was huge, because we weren't providing the one-to-one devices. Parents were going to have to fund these. And it's a huge amount of money. There's no point pretending it's anything but. And you couple that with coming into secondary school, buying the brand new uniform, buying all of those textbooks. It was a huge ask on parents. And it was really, really important that we gave the parents the time and space to understand why we were trying to do it, and then to allow them to voice their concerns and, I suppose, question everything that we were doing. And that's where we all had to make sure that we were on the same page. And we, as the kind of leaders, the digital leaders, had bought in. And I think that's why at the time, before we went to students and approaching the parents for buying for the students, we had spent 2 years working as a team of digital leaders, I suppose, convincing ourselves and looking at the pros, so that when we were addressed by parents, we were going to be able to answer the questions. And we all know it from all aspects of our lives. If we're questioning something and we get a bit of a vague or a wishy-washy answer, more questions arise. And without parental support, this can't work. And kind of jumping ahead to that very first day when we had the group of first years, the very first group of first years, it was myself and Ursula's first year together as the senior leadership team, our very first September starting back. And we speak about fear. I never felt fear like it, because I was petrified that they'd all arrive in without their device. And we were so, so lucky, because I'm going to say the vast majority, and when I say the vast majority, we are looking at 99% of students were there sitting with their laptops, ready to go, feeling as proud as punch, thinking they were real grown-ups with a laptop sitting in front of them. But that shows that the parents obviously bought into what we were saying, and they believed our vision, and we did explain our vision. On that as well, we were very, very cognizant of the cost, and we linked in with our local credit union. And I suppose it showed them that we weren't just doing this on a whim and not taking account of the considerable cost it would have on them. We were trying to support them on that side so that they would support us on ensuring that their child had it when they started with us. And I do think that really, really helped with the buy-in with parents personally.
Really, this is a collaboration. It's among the whole school community, and it's about bringing everyone along. And I'm going back to this 2 years that you spent, gestation period, whatever. This is absolutely mission critical to what you're trying to do, because you need to have the building blocks in place so that you can go out, as you explained, and sell it to the parents, the students, and that. But what about the teachers? Anytime I speak with anyone, I've had the pleasure of meeting a number of the staff there. I genuinely come away with a sense of, God, these people are so passionate about technology and education. You know, it's almost infectious. And that's obviously coming from the senior team. It filters its way down. But how did you bring everyone along, or as much as possible, everyone along?
Yeah, no, and thank you for that lovely compliment. It's lovely to hear that you feel that from our staff. But if I put every single staff member meeting you, you wouldn't get that as well. And I think that's really important to remember, because you just said there, how did I get all of the staff? We are very, very lucky. Every staff member has embraced this, but it is definitely to different levels. And I think that's really important to remember and to understand, that not everybody wants to embrace everything to the same level. So we would never enforce anything. We would never say this has to be done by a certain date. We would just encourage. I always think about how we actually started this, and I would do so much differently with regard to the teachers, but it's only because I'm now on the other side. And I think that's really important to remember. So in those first 2 years, I was the digital leader. I was the teacher learning. And then for the rest, I was suddenly the teacher that was leading it. And I was trying to support teachers as opposed to support students. So that change was huge. But when we were the digital leaders, and it was a model that did work, I'm not saying that this model isn't successful at all. It was absolutely brilliant at the time. But that's really important, because it was, students didn't have laptops at that point. So we had 12 digital leaders. We all trained in certain bits and pieces. We then had to work with two teachers each and train them. And that all worked really, really well. But again, it was because students didn't have laptops yet. And we also didn't have the societal pressure, I suppose, to be using, you know, all of the different technology. Like, most people back then didn't know what Zoom was. They didn't know what a Teams meeting was. And we're all now nearly jaded talking about these things. And I do think that's really important at the time. So I think a school that's starting off brand new mightn't have that lovely luxury that we had of that really slow integration within the staff. And then it's also really interesting, because as soon as the students got those laptops, I was obviously watching what was happening in classes, and our teachers were doing their absolute best. They really, really were. And there were some teachers who were totally excelling, and the learning experiences of our students were absolutely phenomenal. And I don't want to take from that. But I was starting to note that we were potentially going down that route a little bit of turning the devices and the laptops into just a glorified Kindle. They were using it to read their books, and they weren't utilizing the tools properly. And I suppose that was a real moment of self-reflection. And I decided that I wasn't doing enough to support the teachers. And I felt that there definitely were teachers with a huge amount of fear about using technology, and they didn't like taking the chance in front of their students. And we as teachers were not used to being vulnerable in front of our students. And it was a huge mindset shift we needed to make within our staff. So October of that first year of students with devices, I felt the digital leaders were flying. But I genuinely didn't think that we were seeing the progress that I think parents were expecting. And I was conscious of that in the back of my mind. So we totally changed our training model. And I decided if I wanted to be a true leader, I was going to have to walk the walk, and I was going to have to live this. So I had never taught students with devices. And I thought it was really funny. I was asking teachers to do X, Y, and Z, but I wasn't doing it myself. So I went to the principal and I said, look, can I have a class, a block class, where I have 6 weeks with them, and I will try my absolute best to implement technology into the classroom so that I can best support the teachers. And Ursula, being as supportive as she is, she sometimes thinks I'm a little bit crazy, but she's like, yeah, off you go. And then I said, and I'm going to go one step further. Can I actually have it in a subject that isn't my subject? And she was like, why on earth would you want to do that? And I said, because that will really challenge myself. And I asked, could I have a maths class? Because I have, obviously, with my business and economics being my subjects, I am confident enough with maths, but I'm not a maths teacher, so I wouldn't be trained as well as our maths teachers were. So she did. She gave me a first year maths class, and I totally immersed myself in trying to learn different tools, seeing the students, how they were struggling, where they weren't struggling, what they knew, what they could teach me, which was really valuable. And then I started to use everything I was learning from the students and in the classroom at all of our staff meetings. So every time I was speaking at a staff meeting, I was doing it using a tool. So it was Teams that I had actually started with. So I would always communicate with staff through Teams. I would upload all the files to Teams that I would want them to look at in a staff meeting. At the time, we were getting ready for the prize giving. We do a prize giving from our previous year. And I decided to use OneNote to get, instead of handing out sheets that we used to hand out and asking departments to fill it in and drop it back into the office, I did it all digitally. So I was exposing the teachers to stuff that they weren't exposed to before. And as soon as I started doing that, teachers were coming up to me saying, how did you do that? Or why did you do that? Or what is that? And then you said spreading. It actually spread like a virus at that point because they were seeing it in action and they wanted to know a little bit more. So I do think if we were starting back again, I mightn't do the digital leader stage for as long. And I would actually start having the SLT or anybody who delivers at a staff meeting delivering through some medium, some type of, be it Teams, OneNote forums, whatever it was, to expose people sooner to the tools and the different apps so that it's kind of piquing their interest a little bit sooner.
I always think when it comes to digital learning, digital technologies, it's getting the teacher, particularly the reluctant teacher, the teacher who maybe lacks a bit of confidence in their digital skills, it's getting them to make that connection between their subject and the tool. And I think once that connection is made, it's, I won't say it's plain sailing, but it's remarkable. There also is this notion of CPD or PD, you know, it's this one size fits all. I remember a phrase, the drive-by workshop. But often it's the water cooler moment or whatever it is, professional development and continuing professional development for teachers is key, but it doesn't have to be formal.
Absolutely agree. And I think that was a huge turning point for us. It wasn't about the formality. It was just small little, I always say it, it's nuggets. And it's those nuggets then just grow, I believe. And that was a huge eureka moment for us here in our school.
This conversation has very much come from a previous conversation we had. It was a podcast about the flipped classroom last year. And it's a method that I suppose is something you use on a whole school basis. What is the flipped classroom in a nutshell? And why do you use it so much in Orbon?
Yeah, no, and I definitely won't have the correct language or the theoretical frameworks that I probably should be referring to. But for us, the flipped classroom is flipping that idea of the teacher has to be the sage on the stage, standing up, lecturing the students. It gives so much more autonomy to students to learn. And then it also gives the power back to the teacher to actually support individuals within the room. So the idea of the flipped classroom that we have been using across a lot of subjects now at this stage, and again, it's not everybody. I don't want anyone who's listening to this think that it's all unicorns and rainbows and we do everything perfectly here. But the flipped classroom is something that is growing quite a lot. And what would happen with it, depending on the different subject areas, the teacher would set what they would traditionally have done as the work in the classroom for homework. So it could be something as simple as asking the students to write the notes out. So in the past, and I was a teacher who did it, if I was in economics, I would have notes up on the board and I'd be asking students to take it down. And I personally would be struggling to stay silent and not talking over them while they're trying to take it down. And then I would have students who would have additional needs, who would need a little bit of extra time or who really struggled with the looking up and looking down and all of those variables. So instead of doing that in class, what could happen is the students take the notes down at home. Or another teacher, or a few teachers actually, they love recording the piece of work that they would be demoing. And this works so well for science, for graphing, for maths, nearly all of maths problems, for business studies, for say doing accounting, budgets, all of those bits. And what would happen is the teacher records themselves doing it or might find a video online. It's not all teacher created content from Old Bond, but it is teacher created content. And they would ask the students to watch that. That would be their homework. And then when the students comes back into class, they then do the work, as opposed to the teacher teaching it and sending the student home to do the piece of work, be it a practice account, a practice equation, and that they may never have practiced it with the teacher. So suddenly they're doing that in the classroom, they're giving it a go, and the teacher is there able to walk around, support the students, see where the issues are arising, where they're all happening to stop at the same time. And then the teacher addresses that live with the students. And it is an amazing model. And while teachers at the beginning find it's a lot of work to get set up with, you know, creating the videos or creating maybe the PowerPoints, whatever it is that they're using, our students absolutely adore it. And they really love that they can look back at it or use it again, or if they're absent for whatever reason, they feel like they're still part of the class, and they get to then ask the teacher when they're in the room, oh, well, I tried to do this, or I saw you were doing this in class that week while I was out. Can you help me with finishing it? Or I'm stuck at this point. So that's how we're using the flipped classroom model. It's trying to move away from lecturing, I suppose, and having it all very teacher-led to the students doing a lot more work when they're sitting in here with us, where we actually are able to support them a little bit better.
One other question before I move on that, but I think back on when I was in school myself, it would have been great to have been able to click rewind at different stages, and that this is the joy of tapping into the technology and using a model like the flipped classroom model and having videos that, even from a revision perspective for your junior cert or your leaving cert students, they can just go into your Teams and save the teacher having to repeat themselves, I suppose, as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Sarah, I suppose staying on the whole flipped classroom thing and going back to that conversation we had last year, I remember being intrigued, particularly around the whole idea of sharing content prior to lessons, and you referenced the videos, the teacher-generated videos that the teachers would use. But you categorize this content under three headings: must, should, and could. You might unpack that. I think it sounds really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I Must, I Should, I Could came about as a whole school initiative under SSE, and we were focusing on differentiation. So with the I Must, I Should, I Could, we have always encouraged teachers to have three elements to any piece of work that they're giving students, be it homework or be it classwork. And it's all about the success criteria that has to be achieved, but also how can we push our more able students and then push students to want to learn a little bit more. So with I Must, it is the piece of work that has to be completed. So you must do up to a certain point in an account, or you must make sure in an essay that you have three particular points about something. Then you have I Should. And I Should would be kind of suggesting, okay, this would be the next level. This might bring you up a grade if you're looking at grades, or it might help you to critically analyze. And then you bring it to I Could. And this would be really for some students who are real high achievers, the more able students that we're trying to push. And it's giving them another element of what they could do to go one step further. So for example, if it was a budget, the students must fill in the figures into the budget. That might be the original part. They should then try to balance the budget, but that is something that some people struggle with. So I'm not saying that has to be done, but, you know, give it a go would be kind of the attitude around the should. And then could might be where I would pose two extra questions saying, where can you see that this family might save some money, or where should they cut back? So it's pushing students a little bit more to try a little bit harder. And we find with this model, it's quite funny. We thought at the beginning, oh, everyone will just do I Must because they're saying they must do it. And that in itself is a victory, because if everyone does the little bit that they must do, well, at least everybody's on the same page. But we have found that students always try to do the should, and a lot will give the could a go because they don't want to be the one that doesn't do it. No matter what you do, there's always a bit of a competitive streak in a class. There's always that one that wants to be the best. And it's just really interesting you brought that up, Pat, because we had a visiting group of teachers from Flanders only on Monday here in the school. And they were talking about one of their initiatives, and it was very, very similar, but they named it Hero, Superhero, and Power Hero. And I just thought that was a lovely way of doing it. And they'd a little symbol. So instead of actually using the words, there was like, you know, like a lightning bolt and a target. And so beside each piece of work, they would just put those symbols so students knew what they had to do, what they should do, and then what they could do. And I thought it was a lovely way of doing it.
I just think it's brilliant. I mean, you know, here's your differentiation. And it's that innate streak in us all that we want to be competitive. It's almost a sneaky way of getting them to do everything. Look, I can't talk to anyone these days on a podcast without talking about technology is changing at a rate of knots all the time. But the elephant in the room nowadays seems to be generative AI. And we can't get away from it, really. Firstly, anecdotally, are students in Old Bond using Gen AI tools? To your knowledge.
Definitely. They are definitely using it. There's no point pretending they're not. And they're hearing as much as we're hearing. And when I say they are using it, they are using it in ways that perhaps they shouldn't be, and for the wrong reasons. But I think that's giving us, schools, educators, a brilliant opening. There's no point pretending they're not using it. But I also don't think, and this is my personal opinion, it's not Old Bond's opinion, but I don't think we should be stifling them from and not allowing them to learn this, because this might be what they will be using in the workforce. This might be what they're going to be using for the rest of their lives. We all use AI all of the time. So why would we not use generative AI in the correct way? And unfortunately, I do think students are using it. I hate using the word, but it's to cheat, perhaps. And I think that is a fear that schools have, that they're just producing essays. But I would love if we got to a place where we're maybe allowing a student to produce an essay using generative AI and then looking at how they can improve it and putting their own stamp on it. Or I think it's a wonderful way to produce exemplars are what you shouldn't write or what you shouldn't do. Yeah. And I think that can be really, really helpful for students.
I think that's a really important point. And once again, the old head in the sand approach to this are, you know, let's try and find out, you know, who is using it for the wrong reason. I think that's really, you're hiding to nothing. You're going down a rabbit hole there. It's more about looking at, well, how can we use it? And in some ways, how can we reverse engineer it? And I suppose that's where I'm sure you've had a conversation. You've had many conversations around this. But where do you stand on the use of these tools, or where do you see this going?
I firmly believe, and it's given the success we've had and the way our teachers embrace change and give everything a go, I actually can see us using this quite a lot and for the right reasons. And the reason I believe this is, it's quite interesting. I would very regularly ask staff for feedback on loads of different bits and pieces. We're kind of looking at feedback to creating our book lists at the moment. I was asking just a general digital feedback. We did a big forum, I suppose, on digital feedback there recently. And sorry, when I say I'm asking staff, I always ask students as well. So I'm going from both perspectives. But I am inundated with requests from teachers to actually start doing some CPD that is AI focused. And we have a teaching and learning committee. And no matter what we put on the agenda, we all end up talking about AI. We all end up talking about what we're using to support us and to take away some of the administrative burden that we all have with regard to lesson planning and the constant generating of resources. So the appetite for teachers to learn with this, and I would imagine it's across the board, but I know I am so lucky with our staff. We're only planning a staff meeting for next week. It's next Wednesday. And with regard to that, we actually have a group of 20 teachers who are taking small groups of staff and they are doing AI workshops. The focus of it will be looking at how we can use AI to go onto a web page, find an article that we would like to use, and to create an assessment with that so it is not passive learning for students. So our whole idea is how we can make sure that everything we do is a learning experience but is not adding to the workload of the teacher. And using AI, our teachers have created brilliant little ideas of how you can really quickly create a Microsoft form based on a PDF that is generated by AI. And it's self-correcting and it takes about 2 or 3 minutes. But suddenly something that could have been passive, like reading a web page or watching a YouTube video on, I don't know, the water cycle or something, has turned into something where you have an assessment and you have students that have to engage with the entire piece in order to achieve what you're asking them to achieve. So it's teaching our teachers first and working with our teachers and playing with it. But we would like to build it into that, starting with our senior students, that they are using it to support their learning, to maybe generate revision, like use it for revision, to ask it to create a rubric to help them when they are actually doing maybe an exam question. So we are trying to get to that stage, but we have to start with teachers first. As I said, we start next week and it is all teacher led. It is our teachers showing where they have actually used it and used it to great success. And it's all about saving time.
It's about this is here and this is here to stay. And it'll be very much part of the world of work. Arguably, it already is part of the world of work. So, you know, it is a case of embracing it, but embracing it in such a way that we need the correct guardrails in place. It's all about, I suppose, students understanding that how to use these tools ethically, I suppose, but also safely, because, you know, and these are things I think everyone is grappling with. But I think we're better off grappling with them and trying to move on than trying to instead go the opposite direction. But
I completely agree. And I also believe if you try to ban something or stop people from doing things, we're dealing with teenagers. They love to try and break the rules. So here's a lovely way to try break the rules because it's completely legal. It's available to them. So if we straight out ban AI, they're all going to do it. So we would rather actually embrace it with them.
It's something I think we might come back to, Sarah. I'd love to talk to you some more about this, particularly maybe even 6 months down the road, how you're using these things, because we're all, I think one of the most interesting things about this is that we're all learning here.
Absolutely.
Look, I look forward to talking to you again, Sarah, on a future Teach Chat podcast, but just a massive thank you from all of us.
Thanks a million, Pat. I really, really enjoyed chatting with you, and I do look forward to talking about whatever happens in the next 6 months with regard to AI.
And let's watch this today, Sarah.
Thank you.